Welcome to Chats with Fats. I am your host, Paul Fatu'ira. Most people call me Fats. I am a former professional athlete, now international inspirational motivational speaker and director of Internal Strength. Check out my website on www.internalstrength.nz. I will be having conversations with amazing people who have valuable life lessons to share with you. Listen up, take some notes, and enjoy. Chats with Fats is brought to you by West Point Formwork. West Point Formwork is a construction company that specializes in providing the building sector with false work, steel fixing, and concreting services. The team of experienced professionals can work with you to achieve your vision. Check them out on www.westpointformwork.com.au. Today we have the three-time world champion, Hall of Famer, also a champion bloke, I believe, the best Australian boxer ever to come out of Australia. Jeff Finnick, thank you very much. You're a great man. You've done a lot of charity work. You've done so much over a long period of time. I really do appreciate you coming here to share your story with me today. Thank you very much.
Well, it's a pleasure, mate.
Thank you.
Great talking to great people.
Thank you very much. Let's go straight to the point. Your first world title bout, 1985 in Sydney. You were the quickest to get a world title fight. Can you run us through that awesome occasion?
Yeah, like I said, I was pretty blessed, Paul. I got chosen to captain straight at the Olympics in 84 after only 25 amateur fights, had 28 amateur fights. And it was a huge occasion. Although I didn't bring a medal back home, I always remember saying if they wouldn't let me win a gold medal that I'd win a world title for, you know, and when I got back home, and to do it in such a short period of time, like in 196 days, in my seventh pro fight, I don't know, it's like a dream come true. I never really boxed throughout my whole life. All I ever wanted to do was maybe follow the path of the Peter Sterling. I wanted to be a first grade rugby league player, and for everything that happened so quick in the boxing arena, it was totally like a dream come true. Like I said, it wasn't even a dream because I never dreamt of being a world champion boxer. I wanted to be a first grade rugby league player. Too small, of course, but I tried my best. I played, Matthew Shield, SG Ball, Jersey Flag, and then all of a sudden I met Johnny Lewis and I boxed, and the rest is history. I was, like I said, in 196 days in my seventh professional fight, I was the IBF world champion.
Nice, and that relationship with Johnny Lewis is very close. Obviously, you spent a lot of time with him, and he's been great to you, like an awesome mentor. Can you share us your relationship with
definitely
Mr. Lewis?
So, at the start of my career, and towards the back end of it, I look at things, and if I could have changed things and did things differently, you think, and people, throw things at you. But the one thing is, Johnny Lewis is an amazing motivator. He's somebody who I loved like my father, who kept me on the straight and narrow and taught me the things that I am so proud of today, and loyalty and stuff like that. And Johnny was a very important role in my upbringing and in my boxing career. Like I said, although when I look back today and I think of if there were some things I could have been better at, certainly think there were some things that I could have been taught to make me a little better. But if anybody else had been there, I'm not sure I could have stayed there. I stayed there because I love Johnny Lewis, and he was an amazing mentor to me.
And it's important to have great mentors, especially at a young, vulnerable age. And for you to be a world champion so young, like I said before, you're the greatest ever boxer to come out of Australia. The pressure on you, a whole country behind you, that pressure for a young man, how did you take it on your shoulders?
Yeah, definitely. So I remember after becoming world champion, and obviously, you get a little bit cocky and you get big-headed. And I remember one day that I walked in the gym and I look at Johnny, and I must have got off the rails somewhere, and he said, "Son, you see that door you walked in there a couple of years ago? Get the hell out of there." And it brought me straight back down to earth. He like I said, he had that power and stuff like that. But yeah, for me, again, when we talk about pressure, it grew as I got better. But like I said, at 20 years of age, and I won the world title, I was just nearly 21. It was crazy because if you look back to when I was boxing, I was sponsored by Carlton, I was sponsored by Keith Lord, I was sponsored by Blue Haven Pools, I did commercials for Sharp, and it's non-existent today. I think I captured the whole of the country plus, and I was pretty proud, and I said, was there weight? I don't know. I kind of was very, very lucky that I had Johnny around me, and he kind of kept me grounded, and he taught me a lot of things. And like I said, I don't think I could have done that with any other person in my. Oh, I don't believe it, but who knows? But Johnny is certainly very, very special and kept me grounded.
Nice. And you mentioned luck. I truly believe that sometimes you make your own luck, and you had to be in the right places to get that luck. And obviously your upbringing, you're born in Marrickville, tough upbringings. So for you to change your life around and to first and foremost go to the boxing gym and to take that first step, you know, for me, it's you've worked hard to get to where you are and to what you have right now.
Yeah, definitely. So when you think of it, of course, you know, maybe I was lucky that I walked in the youth club that day, but I believe in destiny and what's there was meant to be. And I think back when I look at that, and I think to myself, you know, when that happened to me, Paul, I had to become a full-time professional. I tell everybody trains for two or three hours a day. It's what you do in those other 21 hours that make real champions. And those 21 hours to me were resting, eating properly, watching my weight. So I sacrificed a lot to achieve what I achieved. And I have a few boys that I train today, Billy Dibb and young Brock Jarvis, and they're in the same shoes that I was back then. And to see the sacrifice and to see what they're going through, I know that'll equal success for both of them. And like I said, when you're 20 years of age or 21 years of age and all your friends are going out and you're at home in bed every night at 8 o'clock, it's a huge sacrifice. But I was prepared to do that because today I can go out and do what I want to do and I can enjoy myself.
Exactly, and I'm a massive boxing fan. I did a bit of boxing as an amateur, and I've grown up watching you, and I've actually been doing a lot of homework on you over the weekend, and I watched a few documentaries on you, and you mentioned quite a few times no shortcuts. Can you explain to me?
Well, you know, people talk about, you know, certain rugby league players and fighters that having these huge hearts, and you know, I believe dissect us all, we've got the same size heart. It's your mental capacity. It's the preparation. If you do the work and you know you've done the work, Paul, excuse me, you can go out and achieve. And that's the one thing that I strive to teach the people who I work with. Mm. We've all got the same size heart. It's first from the head, then from the heart. The heart don't tell the head what to do. The head says, hey, we've done that before, we can do it. And if you've done the work, it's not impossible. Well, I mean, it's not simple, but it's not impossible. Like for me, when I had my first fight and I was going to fight 15 rounds, everybody said, oh, he's never gone 15 rounds before. How can he do it? I'd done it 100 times before. I'd done it in the gym. I prepared for it every day. Of course I knew I could do it. If I didn't think I could do it, I wouldn't have, you know, taken the challenge, but I'd done it in the gym every day.
Exactly. And you look super fit that last 15 rounds. You're still bouncing on your toes. Like today they go 12 rounds, and to be bouncing on your toes, I've watched your fights. You're super fit. And I've heard that you've been able to run 10Ks in 30 minutes. That's pretty quick. That's very fast. You look pretty fit now. Can you do that today?
No,
what do you reckon?
No, I can't do them. But yeah, I kind of prided myself on being fitter than everybody else. Whenever anybody else grew, I wanted to make sure I could do it better. And, you know, and even to this day, I'm still competitive with my boys. I try to, you know, make as good as effort as I can to show them that, you know, the person that is telling them what to do can also do it. I think it's very, very important. But like I said, I was always a good athlete, and not an athlete, but I was always somebody who worked hard as a rugby league player. I was just think of this, that when I was 18 years of age, I represented, or 19 years of age, I represented Australia at the Olympics at 51 kilos.
Yes.
And I was playing SG ball then, I was playing Jersey Fleet then. So
for Parramatta?
And I played Jersey Fleet for Newtown. And then I played, and when I retired from boxing for England, I had a couple of games with Parramatta. But for me, size meant nothing. Yeah, it was just technique and me being fitter and me showing somebody that I wanted it more. And that's why I always loved Jack Gibson as a coach. He didn't really care about the size of the person. As long as you worked hard and you deserved the chance he gave it to you, then it was up to you to show him that you could do it on the field. And that's what I believe in. I believe in those guys who work hard, give them the opportunity and they'll shine. And that's why I said preparation is everything. If you've done the work, you go out and you can do the work again.
Definitely. Preparation is the key, which should give you more confidence to go out there and perform. And for myself, I was working in the education and wellbeing space. And as a professional athlete myself, I did preparation, but then I'll go home and I'll be on my mind. And it's probably what you've been through too. It's best you've done the work, just forget about it. Go out and enjoy your life and do what you do to make you relax and calm down. I think today athletes still struggle with, yes, they've done their homework, but they go home and they're worried and stressed about their performance?
Well, because there's so much public media. Everybody's got eyes on you today. Do something wrong. There's a camera in every part of the football field. You can make a half a mistake, and they see everything you do. And there's a lot of pressure on people today. I think it's whether it's good or bad, I'm not too sure. But it's just there's so much scrutiny on people. Everything you do right, everything you do wrong, and so people can see it all. So it's really public. And I think that back when I was competing and out there, we didn't have the social media and stuff, which made it a little easier. So I mean, I can imagine me going out one night and enjoying ourselves, and next day you walk in the house and it's all over the paper, over Facebook, over Insta. So it's hard on people today. So I think we live in a great place, but it's not an easy place to live if you're a professional athlete with a profile.
Definitely, I can relate to that. Like, I wasn't a high class professional athlete, but I played in the high ranks. I was amongst Benji Marshalls and the Jared Haynes, and obviously for yourself, you understand that the pressure is just straight on you, whether you do one thing wrong or the pressure, and it's hard. People judge you by social media. They don't really know you as a person, and I've seen it firsthand.
And definitely, of course, I've been there myself, Paul. I've made some mistakes, and not that I'm proud of them, but hopefully people look and say, he made that mistake. Let's not do that, but you got to realise also that you've got family and friends that you affect as well by doing these things. And I think that we have these people like yourself who love going around talking to people. But I think the thing that we need more, Paul, is it's got to be more regular. Anybody can go at the start of the year and talk to somebody and they think, wow, that was an amazing speech. Geez, I really learned something today. But 2 weeks later, it's forgotten, Paul. Out of sight, out of mind. You've got to constantly remind these youngsters today about social media, about making mistakes, and about the ramifications of the mistakes. It's not just yourself, but like I said, for me, I'm a father now, and every time something happens or somebody brings something up from the past, because it hurts my kids. I've got three beautiful children. I've got two girls and my son, and I've got a wife, and it hurts people. It hurts people who love me, and it hurts people who have supported me. But there are a lot of people who are really pretty tough keyboard warriors and tough over the phone and stuff like that, and they just don't realise that people have got emotions, and that's why we have these people that are out there today taking their own lives, because they can't deal with the pressure. And we've got to learn as a society to not be as harsh on people, and listen, we all make mistakes. For instance, when somebody makes a mistake and everybody wants to jump on their back, just open your own door and have a think about what you've done in your life. And just because people don't know, or because you don't have a profile, just don't realise the hurt you're putting upon people.
Exactly. Wise words from the world champion. We all make mistakes, but it's important to learn and move forward. Let's go back to your highlight of boxing career, your second world title, 1987, the bantamweight division.
Super bantamweight.
Super bantamweight. Explain the night, the occasion, the build-up to the fights.
Yeah, again, like people, for me, it was an amazing night. It was like, first Aussie ever to win two world titles, but the opponent that I beat that day, Samar Pakaroon, is an icon. He's like the Don Bradman in Thailand. He was the greatest ever Muay Thai fighter, which is their sport, and people don't realise. They look at him, they go, Jeff Fenwick beat this Thai guy, and the person that he knocked out to win the title, Lupi Pinto, had nine, that was his nine defence of the title, and won eight of them, and he knocks him out cold, knocks out another great Mexican named Juan Meza. Now, this guy was an amazing talent, an amazing puncher, and for me to beat him, it wasn't easy, because like I said, he hit me a few times during the course of those first four rounds, and it really shook me and made me realise the quicker I get him out of there, the better it's going to be for me. And I was, like I said, again, superbly conditioned for the fight. I was, a great pressure fighter. And what he didn't realise was that he's fought people like the Mexicans who put on pressure, but nobody cut the ring off like Jeff Fenwick, put the pressure on like I did. And in four rounds, he crumbled. And he was great enough to say prior to the event that when he knocked me out, because he believed that he'd knocked me out, that he was going to put on a kickboxing demonstration. So then he done that in his dreams, because he got taken to hospital by ambulance to St. Vincent's that night, and thank God he was good. But he went back to Thailand, and he was banished. He had to go and become a Buddhist monk and pray, and they believed that he threw the fight. But the only thing that he threw was, the only thing that happened was I threw more punches at him and hurt him. But
you hurt him massively too badly.
Just as he hit him with the right hand, and as he was going down, I hit him with the right uppercut, which turned the lights out. Yeah,
it did. Yes, four rounds. The anthem. Speak to me. That looked like when the anthem was played before that fight. It looked very. You're in the moment. You had the whole country behind you. It looked surreal.
Yeah, like I said, Paul, I was one of those blessed guys that when I fought, the whole country stopped. I mean, I used to get letters from nuns saying, Jeff, we're at the front of the pub, we couldn't go in there, but we watched it through the window, they'd watch my fights, and wow, to me, that made me feel so great, made me feel, like a pretty important Aussie, you know.
Well, you're very important.
Especially for somebody who had come from St. Peter's, Murray, where I come from, with a family who, we were called Wogs all our lives growing up, and to be able to stop a nation was something that I'm very, very proud of.
Nice, and we'll go forward to 1988, your featherweight title, your third world title fight, three-time world champion, first Australian ever to do that.
Yeah, no, I was the first Australian to win two, but I was the first person in the world to win three and be undefeated, and I won it. It was only broken yesterday, Paul. My record was broken yesterday by Vasily Lemonchenko, who won.
But in saying that was held on for 30 years. That's a long time.
It was a great record. But like I said, to do it so quick and to do it undefeated, which was the first fighter in history to do that, certainly made me proud. But if you watch that fight, that's a fight. We had two guys who, elbowed, head-butted, two guys who wanted to be world champion. And, although it wasn't to the rules, it was... Is what I believe a real fight is. You do anything to win. You just roll your sleeves up, and when it got down and dirty, when he headbutted me, I headbutted him back. When he elbowed me, I elbowed him back, because the referee obviously wasn't taking control of the fight properly. But if you look at that fight, I honestly believe it would be probably one of the dirtiest fights in the history of boxing.
Mm. End of the day, you got the W, got the win, which is the most important thing, and you did it with one hand. You broke your hand.
Yeah, I broke my hand prior to the fight. And, I didn't really tell anybody, and when I got my injections early in the evening, by the time three or four rounds had passed, the adrenaline had pushed the marcaine through my body, and I was in terrible pain. But again, when we talk about heart, there's nothing to do with my heart. My mental strength said, you've been there before, you've done it before, let's get the job done. So I just done the best I could with one hand, used the other hand when I had to, and did what I had to do to get the victory. And again, like I said, to knock that guy out in the 10th round and to win my third world title, wow, it was, again, I can't explain, because like I said,
surreal.
Hard
work, relief.
When you grow up and you want to be a first grade rugby league player, then so you think of in the space of 4 years or 5 years, from 81 to 88, that's 7 years. I've gone to the Olympics and become this phenomenon in the boxing arena. It's a big thing, because like I said, I'd never pulled on a glove in my life as a teenager until I was 17.
Nice. And you called retirement for a little bit there. Just your body took a bit of
It was a fight, a couple of fights after that, when I defended against Marcus Villasana. Of course, I had hands, but like I said, again, I had hand problems all my career. So, but at that time, Paul, my head wasn't in the right place. I'd just been managed by IMG and James Erskine, my manager back then, had done an amazing job, but I'd sacked him after the fight because my promoter was saying that he was having problems because they were giving him problems, and all the pressure that put on me made me, I took the easy way out for once in my life, which I shouldn't have done. Mm. I jumped out of and thought I would retire because I didn't want to break the hearts of my promoter, who said that he wasn't making break-even bill. And anyway, as I learned today, it was the worst thing I've ever done, like sacking my management team, because they were the best, they'd done the best for me. But like I said, you live and you learn, and it's all an experience, and I'm here today being able to talk to you and share these experiences with you, and hopefully people will learn from them that made a mistake. We all make mistakes, and we just get on with life, and you forgive, you forget, and just work.
Here is a short snippet with next week's guest, Premiership winner and Queensland State of Origin prop, rugby league legend, Ben Ross.
Nick? I copped a few at the Dragons. At the Sharks. I copped a few injuries at the Sharks where first year after seven games, I thought I'd been playing my career best form. A week out from being selected for Australia, I was in the training squads there, and had a knee reconstruction plan against Penrith. So I snapped my knee in half, and so I had to have a knee reco. So it put me out for the rest of the year, then came back the year after, so 2007. Played really well, thought, okay, I'm back in the midst of things. I'll be able to play Origin in 2008. Unfortunately, I got knocked out in the first game of the season. Wasn't thinking straight, played the next week. Luckily, there's a lot of concussion rules around at the moment, but came out the next week, timing was off, accidentally elbowed Cooper Cronk in the face, suspended for 10 weeks. So it was quite hard. So it was a roller coaster for me for those 3 years, and I thought I can build through it. It was very tough. Coming to 2009, I was 28 years of age and thought, yeah, this is right, I'm back on track. Best years of my forwards career is in their late 20s. I thought, I'm going to make a go of it. The fittest I've ever been, strong. Penrith Park, round one. It was actually as we ran out, you couldn't see because of the rain. A lightning bolt actually hit the footy post and they said, oh, things should have been called off. We played on about 50 minutes into the game. Made a conventional tackle on a player. Unfortunately, he got pushed over onto my neck and it snapped. Pretty devastated, yeah, was the thing. First thing that went through my head was Ricky Stewart always said to me, get up. If you're ever injured, get up and get back in the line. For some reason, I couldn't move my arms and I didn't know I'd had a broken neck.
About 3 months ago, we did a charity shoot together. And when I first came into your beautiful home, I thought, how good is this? Like an athlete who sacrificed his whole body, time away from family, the hard work that you put on your body, and to see the accolades that you're able to show as a has-been professional rugby league player myself. I've been amongst rugby league players and other athletes that have worked so hard to make the money, but then they lose it. I've lost it, but yeah. For you, honestly, that's the first feeling that I felt when I walked into your home. I saw here's a champion, a world champion that's actually done really good for himself in the sport, the highest level, but also business sense wise. And can you give any tips to the athletes of today?
I'll give you one tip that you're talking about being a has-been. You know, Paul. There are certain people in certain sports that are greater than others, but greatness isn't always shown. In our field of sport, I mean, what you do outside the field, and I know what I do outside the field, and people say, oh, why don't you tell people? You know, I don't need to tell. I do things for other people because I just want to do it, Paul. Mm. I don't do things so the media know. I just do because I want to do things, and I believe that when you do good things, good things in your life happen, and that's why you're in the position that you are today, because although you might have been the greatest rugby league player ever, you're a great person, and you played the game to the best of your ability, and today, as far as I'm concerned, when I sit down and talk to you, you're a great person, a great human being. To me, that's more important than being. I'd rather people think that I'm a great person rather than a great fighter. And you know, when I travel overseas and I see other fighters, they respect me not just for my quality in the ring, but my friendship, my qualities outside the ring. And for me, that's more important than that. But about having money and keeping it. I always used to think to myself that you look at all these great fighters who had made millions and millions of dollars and then they have nothing. And I didn't want to be one of those. So I'm pretty proud. And I never heard the millions of dollars like they
crazy
did.
Crazy now. But you set the platform for that.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
For today's generation.
Yeah, 100%.
So mad respect for you for that.
Yeah, 100%. Like some of the mistakes I made, some of the things I went through have made it a million times better for our fighters today. I remember Costa Zoo, so I got more in one fight than I got in my whole career because of the people that I introduced him to, because of the platform that I had set, and because of the lessons I had learned, because I'd been robbed prior to that. But like I said, everything happens for a reason, and if you can do that and be happy, I'm good, Paul. Like I said, people can say somebody else was better than me. Well, I don't get involved in that kind of talk. All I know is what I done. I look in the mirror and proud of what I done, and I know that I took no shortcuts. I know that I never would lay down. The only I used to say from the first fight, the only way I lose a fight is if they carry me out. I've lost three fights, I got knocked out three times. I'm proud, mm-hmm. And nobody's gonna beat me on points. I'm not gonna walk out of the ring that way. But that's boxing. We're all different, and my upbringing and my demeanor is different. So everybody's different. That's the hard thing when you transition to being from a fighter to a coach. You can't expect everybody to be like Jeff Fenwick. So you've got to work this person out as an individual. It's the same as rugby league. I mean, today I think you can see there's more of an individual training. Like, you can't, everybody can't do the same. Like, just because Jeff, just because Paul can't run as fast as Jeff doesn't mean he's not as good, or we're going to punish people for that. Everybody's different, so everybody's individual. And I learned that, and like I said, every time I train somebody, the first thing I try to do, Paul, is I sit down and talk to him, and I try to work out the person that he is and what he needs to do and how we need to do it. Because, yeah, somebody, in the old days, somebody can swear at you and give you a slap on the head and you go out and kill somebody for it. Today, if you slap somebody here, they want to go home and kill themselves. Mm. So we've got to be careful. We've got to be careful how we tread, because, yeah, man, we live in a very brittle place now.
Yeah, you know, very vulnerable.
Yeah, very vulnerable. The like I said, it's not the same thing. And because of the social media and because of the pressures and because everything that happens now, everybody knows. Like, back in the day, you know, when somebody done that, we didn't even know, nobody heard about it. But today, through social media, if somebody gets a scratch on their face, or if somebody hits their son or hits their daughter, you see it on social media, or somebody says it. So we live in a very, very vulnerable place, and that's why I kind of wish that we went back to the old days, where after school, kids didn't go and put a computer on or a laptop on. They went and played in the park. Yes. They want to be an athlete. And the world's changed.
It has changed.
And I'm not sure it's changed for the better. I don't believe it has.
I think there's a more of an awareness with mental health issues, but I think, like you mentioned before, social media, the pressures has risen massively, and that's the reason why we still have mental health issues for today. But I think the good thing is people are speaking about it more, and people do have more stories to tell.
The thing is, it's always been there, and it's always been this big issue, but nobody's really known about it. And lots of things have been, hidden under the carpet for years about lots of different things, And I think some of the rugby league players today that I think were my heroes back then, who work on trucks and stuff today. I just think that the NRL, and they should be doing more for them, because these guys, they've got mental issues today. Not just that they don't play great, but some of them have been concussed many, many times. They've got dementia, and they're slowly thinking, what do we do with their lives after rugby league? And I think there should be more done. There should be more done to help and protect these people.
You're definitely right, and a lot of it comes with loss of identity. And the good thing about you, Jeff, you've held your unique self. You're the man that you are. Back when you won those world titles, and you hold yourself very strong, whereas I went through it myself, the lack of identity, being seen as a professional athlete, rugby league player, then once that's taken away from you, who are you? And I think I've come across past players that I played with back in my heyday is that they're going through those sort of issues as well, trying to find themselves again, and having a goal of being a professional athlete at such a young age, and then 30, you're retired, it's hard to refocus and find another goal. But for yourself, when you retired, how did you stay focused, healthy, and did you pretty much have a plan? Did you have a 30-year plan, what you're going to do?
Again, when I talk about money and stuff, and how the story of, old fighters who had something that had nothing, I looked at them as well, and I used to think, wow, that guy's to be 60 kilos, now he's 120 kilos. I didn't want to do that either. I think I try really hard to look after myself and try to be as healthy as I can, and try to stay in a kind of, of course I've put on weight, but I still try to,
I'll tell you what, I trained with you a month ago. You were graceful and trained me for two sessions. You're still very competitive. I know we're on there, what do you call that?
Yeah.
I was in your own personal gym, and you're very competitive. You smoke me just quietly, I can sense that competitiveness. You still got it, and it's important. You got to have that competitive nature, and as a part of life, you have to be competitive and be the best that you can be.
And like I said, I'm kind of this person who's really, really proud, and I want to wear. Like I said, I've got a stature that I want to live up to, and I want to. Of course, it's great to go out and graze and relax, but I've got. Like, I used to think, Paul, this is the truth. I used to think that at 50, your life was over. I'm 54 and
looking great too, just quietly.
Saying, but I can still do what I done when I was 30. Not quite as good, but I still believe that I can do it. And if you believe in things, like I said, this is the head. It's all from the head. If you believe you can do something, you'll do the best you can and you'll enjoy your life. Like I said, I thought, and Mike Tyson, Mike and I used to talk about our lives and think that it was going to be all over at 40 to 50 year old man. But yeah, we're not. It's,
And how was that experience of the great Iron, Mike Tyson?
Yeah, it was amazing. To obviously be the trainer of Mike Tyson for me was a huge thing. As good as anything that's ever happened in my boxing career. Mm. When I think of world titles, they were all great, but to train Mike Tyson was as great, maybe greater for me. I loved it. Had this amazing experience meeting amazing people through Mike, and it was a great period of my life.
Nice. And you mentioned meeting great people. I was very fortunate enough to go into your man cave, which is pretty much the Hall of Fame. It has WBC bouts. You've got this awesome wall of celebrities: Donald Trump, Will Smith, Rachel Hunter, which you see she was British, but she's actually Kiwi. So just to correct you on that, Champ, she's a Kiwi.
She's British?
Yes, but she's a Kiwi. I have to come there one.
She's a Kiwi.
You've practically got a whole wall of celebrities and what's expensive? Give me two experiences with two celebrities on their awesome wall.
Meeting her, because I always thought
she's beautiful too. Just
and what I love about her, because I've read about her, because she had a book and stuff, and she would never put photos of herself in her house and stuff because she didn't want her
Rachel
children,
Hunter.
Yeah, yep. She didn't want her children to think they had to compete against her or look how beautiful mum. She was this amazing mum, and I believe that that's great. But I mean, when I met Al Pacino, who's not on my wall because I just met him, but when I met Al Pacino, it was amazing because I was walking out of the restaurant and he wanted to meet me, so that made me feel like pretty important. But I think the greatest experience I've had in my life was when I was Kerry Packer's trainer, to sit with that man and see how generous he is and see what an amazing man he was, and to see how hard he worked, not just in business or in life, but when he came to train, he trained his backside off. It was just a really, really amazing experience for me. So I've been blessed. Like I said, I've travelled the world and been with some amazing people, and I've loved my life. I've made mistakes that I think that would have loved, or of course I would have loved it, not that it happened, but it's happened. It's an experience. I go, I talk about it, I share my experience with people, and hopefully they'll become better people for that, my experiences.
The man you are and the accolades that you've achieved overrides maybe the setbacks that you've had in your career. Jeff Fenwick, today you're a coach. You've got two young, talented fighters.
Billy Dibb and
Brock Jarvis. Can you share with us the next upcoming fights for these two awesome athletes?
Yeah, I'm training a youngster by the name of Brock Jarvis and Billy Dibb, who's in his last phase of his career. His brother, and he came and approached me and asked me would I help them and train them. And first I was a little bit apprehensive, but after Billy spoke to me, I seen the keenness and the will and desire and drive that he had. We done some work together, and over the last 6 or 7 months working with Billy Dibb, it's been like, wow, it's made me so happy to see that I can give somebody something and give them this new vision and give them something new. And I've enjoyed training Billy so much. In the next couple of months, hopefully he'll fight for the world title, and I believe that he will win 3 world titles and he'll join Jeff Fenwick at the top of the Australian boxing chain. But I just am so proud of the hard work that he's put in, the commitment and dedication. And young Brock is the nephew of the great Pat Jarvis, who played for St George and Roosters,
yes,
and Canterbury and North. But and young Brock, if it wasn't for Brock, I wouldn't be in boxing. I'm in boxing because of Brock. He knows that. I know that. The day that little Brocky retires, I'll retire, because not that I don't love boxing. I've had a break from it for a while, and I got back into it, and it's still the same, Paul. I mean, Australian boxing, we all need either to be together and help each other, or I don't want to be in it at all. And I don't believe that's ever going to happen. I don't ever believe that the whole of the Australian boxing people will be on the same page. And for me, if you're not on the same page, you shouldn't be on it at all. Mm-hmm. So it's sad that boxing's like that in Australia. There's this group, there's that group and that group. And if you're not in that group, you're no good. If you're in this group, you're bad. So I don't like that. But I've only really got one fight with Brock, and now I've got Billy. So I don't really get involved in all the politics of it anymore, so and that's why I don't have more fighters. So
more so for the enjoyment and...
Yeah, I love it. I love boxing. Without boxing, I wouldn't be here, Paul. You wouldn't be talking to me, though. Yeah. Look, if the end of July, Billy Dibb becomes world champion again, wow, it'll be like the most amazing thing I've ever done. I love giving more than receiving. Although I don't talk to Danny Green today, one of the greatest moments of my boxing career was when Danny Green beat Eric Lucas in Canada. Made me happier and more prouder than I ever did when I won a world title, to see that kid reach the heights he did that night, because I think he was brilliant that night. And I'm that kind of person. I much prefer to give and give to somebody else and watch them have this amazing ride and success than me. But like I said, when these two guys are done, I do believe that I won't be in boxing for much longer.
That'd be sadly missed, because you've achieved so much in the sport of boxing. You've given so much to the sport of boxing in Australia and also the world. Let's talk about Hall of Fame alongside the great Floyd Mayweather, Lennox Lewis, Holyfield, the list goes on.
Floyd's not in it yet, mate.
Oh, he's not in? Sorry, I apologise.
He's got to be retired for 6 years. But he'll get... I'm one of the rare ones too. You've got to be retired 6 years and then you're eligible. Okay. Well, in my 6th year, I was chosen in my first year of eligibility, which doesn't happen too often, which you know speaks for itself. But like I said, Amy, I'm honoured to be there with Roberto Duran, Ray Leonard, and all the great
marvelous Bobby Hagler. Yeah, yeah. So Roberto Duran is one of your fighters that you looked up to.
I just believe Roberto was the greatest of all time. He just
tough.
Yeah, he had the hunger, he had the killer. I mean, the guy fought over 5 decades.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's never been done, and he's. Like I said, Styles make fights, like Thomas Hearns destroyed him, but then he destroys Iran Buckley, who knocks out Tommy Hearns. And, you know, Styles make fights, but Roberto would fight anybody. And one of the great things that happened was just recently was when Jeff Horn fought Manny Pacquiao. Young Brock fought on the undercard, and Roberto was there helping us and, you know, nice. Giving Brock all these tips. And we had an amazing couple of weeks down there with him. It was an amazing time.
Nice. Jeff Fenwick, thank you very much for your time. It's been a pleasure to spend time with you, for you to welcome me into your beautiful home. One more question to finish off with. The Jeff Fenwick today, if you had to encourage that young Jeff Fenwick running the Marrickville streets as a young 11, 12-year-old, what would be your advice for that young 11-year-old coming up?
Yeah, my advice to everybody is, to try to be the best you can. But like I said, my advice is this: pick the right people to hang around with. I mean, as a kid, as a youth, I hang around with people that were in fights. I got in fights every day. I mean, as a parent now, I advise all parents: when your son or daughter says they're going to Johnny or to Mary's house, give yourself 30 minutes and drive down and see if they're there. If they're there, I'll give you a couple of dollars tip. But if they're not, you give me a couple of dollars. I'm going to make more money than those parents. But like I said, we are who we mix with. We are, and I think it's very, very important as a parent to make sure that your children are around good people. And I say that, but it just doesn't happen. It's not an easy thing your children pick friends or associates, and sometimes they're not the greatest. But it's very hard to tell your kids what to do in this day and age as well.
That is, Jeff. I have one little gift to give to you. I have a look in my bag, which is over here. I should have pulled it out. But because of your gracious time, I have a little gift for you.
Oh, you can keep that 20,000, mate. I don't want it, mate.
Oh, mate, I think this is a bit of a gratitude card. As I've known you for the last 3 months, I've gotten to know you very well. You're very grateful for everything in your life.
Something's going to jump out and bite me.
No. It's not a $20,000 paycheck, unfortunately. Chats with Fats is just starting off, but just a bit of a, I guess I'm grateful for you to allow me to come into your home and to spend some time with a legend like yourself.
Well,
so thank you.
We know one thing, just before we switch off, I know what you do for the community and for people. I would love, if you ever need me to help you, if you ever need me to come and be a part of you trying to help these kids, I'm always there for you. So thank you.
Thank you.
My house and my door is always open to you.
Thank you very much, Jeff. I appreciate your time. Chats with Fats is brought to you by West Point Formwork. West Point Formwork is a construction company that specializes in providing the building sector with false work, steel fixing, and concreting services. The team of experienced professionals can work with you to achieve your vision. Check them out on www.westpointformwork.com.au. Thank you for tuning in to Chats with Fats. You can find the link on www.internalstrength.nz.